So I can hear you.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Deplorable Nation. I'm your host, Deplorable Janet, and today I have another lovely new guest to the show. And
lovely?
Yes, lovely. I'm super excited to have a chit-chat. I'll
quote you on that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm super excited to have a chit-chat with you today because we have a lot in common. In your family and in mine. And so first time we spoke on the phone, we had a very lengthy phone conversation.
I think it was over 2 hours.
It was.
My wife was starting to get angry. Like I'm talking to some kind of salesman that wouldn't let me get off the phone.
This is Jake from State Farm.
Yeah. I'm wearing khakis. Actually, I'm wearing sweats. So,
so welcome, Mr. Def Griffin, to the show. How are you, my dear?
I'm doing good for Wednesday. Yeah.
Wednesday,
I'm doing good
yes.
for Wednesday. Hmm?
I am super glad to chit chat with you today. And the first thing that I want to talk to you about is your walk in faith and how God has worked in your lives, not just you, but your wife, and has changed things. So tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, I'll breeze over myself real quick. I'm my mid-50s. I'm 56. Me and my wife met in 2001. We met online. We were one of the first victims to try it, actually. And she's from North Carolina. I'm from up here, this area. I'm originally from just south of Philadelphia. And I was staying with my brothers in Delaware, and I didn't have a girlfriend or anything, so I'm like, you know, look, nobody around here is even looking at me for some reason. I'm just me. And I get on a website, and, you know, they have the whole list of girls that are available with their pictures or somebody else's pictures saying it's them.
Right. It was actually my friend Bob. No.
Yeah. I'm just scrolling down and, you know, like, press these porn stars, and I'm like, I don't even want to know. Then I stop on a name. And you know how a German Shepherd would see something he's not quite sure of? Mm-hmm. He goes, huh? That's what I did. So I hit her name. It was Nice Girl. You know, not any of these other weird names. Just Nice Girl. I click on it, and I type, are you really a nice girl? Click. And about a minute later, she responds, I think I am. And that's all it started. And we ended up chatting for a whole year online, not showing any pictures or anything. I just did like a drawing of myself and just had that on the screen. So she identified that with me. And she's like, well, will you want to come down Christmas 2001? I'm like, yeah, I will. So I paid $150 for a Ford station wagon back in 2001, got a new windshield put in it. And I drove 8.5 hours one way. 471 miles down in North Carolina on the coast. Pulled in her place at 1:30 a.m. in the morning. She's like, here's your room. Out like a light.
Yes, probably.
Yeah, we prepared. Now, we have this convenience store called Wawa here. And they're known for the coffee and their sandwiches and all. So I bought two sandwiches down with me, but they're all separated so the rolls don't get soggy. Mm-hmm. I made her sandwiches that morning for breakfast or lunch or whatever, and she loved them. She loved the coffee, everything. Now, since she's a Southern girl, she has these cast iron skillets, and her mom was a school cook. So after she enjoyed the sandwiches, she's like, all right, well, I'm going to make you my favorite meal. Fried chicken made in cast iron skillets. These cast iron skillets are 100 years old each.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I bit into a chicken leg. I started crying. She's like, what's wrong? I said, it's so good. The next night, we're watching a Stevie Ray Vaughan concert on tape. I proposed to her. And we got married September 12th, 2003. And as God sits, as God lives, he has led us through all this stuff that we've been through, which I will talk about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, finance-wise, we're not rich. I mean, we're basically the working poor. I mean, I drove trucks, but all local, and she stayed home. That's what we agreed to. That's what we prayed on. Mm-hmm. And she is so good with finances. every month at the end of the month, we probably had like a dollar or two or maybe 75 cents left in the bank. Got all our bills paid for. My credit rating was like 400 something. It was horrible. But I was working and she was good with bills. And now in 2024, I think I have like an 800 credit rating now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's helped me through all that. I couldn't do it. We have all our stuff paid for. You know, we got a nice minivan, a 2019 Toyota Sienna that's paid for. And yeah, we have bills, but we catch up to them all the time, every month. You know, we're always prompt in paying everything.
Mm-hmm.
And God has healed me from my previous relationship back in the 90s that I was so damaged from. It took my wife years to piece my heart together with God to show that I was actually lovable again.
Mm-hmm.
And she has done that. She's been that incredible. She's, you know, really soft-spoken, gorgeous Southern Belle blonde. And we have a 19-year-old daughter. So we had our daughter right after we got married, which is also biblical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah, things that God has led us through has been amazing. I don't hear him audibly. I just know in my heart what's mm-hmm. right. And I read my Bible all the time. I listen to it all the time.
Right.
She's actually, the thing is, when she prays, she gets answers within like a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
And one funny thing came up. We just wanted to go to Burger King at a place where we used to live at. And she was wondering, she just asked herself, like, I wonder if they still have onion rings there. And I didn't hear her say anything about it. I'm just like, hey, we're going to Burger King. I'm going to get a sandwich or something. We get there. We place all our orders and everything. And I'm grabbing my stuff out of the bag. And, you know, my chicken sandwich is here. And I grab a thing of fries. And I look at it and I'm like, oh, hey, Bun. I call her Bunny. Bun, here's an onion ring for you. The look on her face is like, what? And then she told me what happened. It was like an hour earlier. It so happened that the order that we had onion rings in it with my fries. I was like, hey, Bun, here you go. Here's an onion ring. And God answered that way, as amazing as it is, with an onion ring.
Well, you know, I love those little little instances like that, you know, yeah. that we take for granted so often because – like the place we live now is okay, but the place we lived before was like my ideal. I got to see wildlife every day and, you know, deer and tons of bunnies and foxes and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I was sitting outside here at our new place one day and I was like, I really miss seeing the eagles and the hawks all the time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't 2 seconds later, and one lands on our fence. The only one I've seen on this property and haven't seen one since. And it's little, yeah, it's like little things like that where, you know, gee, I really miss something or I wish I could see or, you know, whatever. And he makes it happen. And I love when that happens. And I always say, oh my gosh, thank you. Or even the silliest thing like, a route that I've driven like 50 times, right? And then for some reason I'm driving it and the mapping reroutes me onto a road I've never been on. And it's like the most beautiful scenery. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you for showing me that.
Yeah.
Because I never would have seen that in the regular path.
Yeah. And where we live at, we live just south of Harrisburg, about half an hour. Place called York. It's a little bit east of Gettysburg and about 20 minutes south of a 3 Mile Island. And I got pictures of those. I think I showed you before. And that's a wild place itself. But I love driving around. I love driving. I practically have a photographic memory of all the places I've been to.
Mm-hmm.
If I go somewhere twice and I drive there, I never forget where it is.
Right.
And it drives me crazy sometimes because I feel like I'm running out of room in my head because my brain's so big.
That's you ask him to free up storage space.
Yeah, that's what I got to do. But I mean, other things that God's done for us. I mean, our daughter back in like 2014, 2013, she had an allergic reaction to Gardasil. And mm-hmm. she had to have that for her school.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up getting very bad seizures, which was probably the most scariest thing I've ever witnessed.
Uh-huh.
And we went to DuPont's Children's Hospital in Wilmington, Delaware. And they were phenomenal there. And thankfully, God has healed her slowly through that. And it's like everything that we do, even if it's major, like him bringing me and my wife together, or healing my daughter, or healing my wife with her knee, which I'll talk about next, he's always there to help us. Mm-hmm. And it's like I pray a lot. And sometimes it feels like it's bouncing off the ceiling, but I know he hears me. Mm-hmm. I don't doubt that. I don't doubt God at all.
Right.
It's my own self that doubts. Like I'm the doubting Thomas here.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen so much where I can't doubt, but still there's always that lagging fear and like getting whispered out from like back here in this wall somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You just gotta be able to blot that out. That's using faith that, hey, I know I got fear, but I know God is bigger than my fear. And that's one thing I talk about a lot when I'm, you know, listen to some of these other programs and I type comments in where they're saying, oh, the NGO food is so poisonous. You'll die if you eat 3 bites out of a hamburger. If it does have it in there, yeah, let it be in there. But the Bible said, you know, we'll be treading on scorpions. You know, we'll mm-hmm. be stepping on them with our feet.
Right.
And God says 365 times in the Bible, do not fear. That's right. One time for every day.
Right.
I've taken hold of that. I've embraced it as hard as I can. When we bring food in from the market, you know, we can't grow anything here. We live in a little complex.
Right.
My wife does make homemade bread, homemade ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whenever we get food from the market, as she's bringing it in from the garage, she's praying over it.
Right.
When she's preparing it, she's praying over it. I don't have to pray over it because she's already prayed over it. I'll need to lay my hands on it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to eat it. You know, and that's so far as to stand us, even through like all these vaccinations and
right.
stuff. I haven't been vaccinated in like 20 years. Yeah, you know, I haven't been sick. You know, I have other things going wrong with me, but at least I'm not having that.
Right.
And, you know, we've, you know, give thumbs down to the vaccinations. My daughter had them when she was born,
mm-hmm.
but the Gardasil one was the final one.
Right.
So thankfully we have doctors that, hey, I tell them, look, I'm Christian. You know, I'm against these new vaccines, you know, especially the flu one that they're bringing right. in with and it has yep. mRNA in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I said, look, I can't take those. I'm at risk enough for being injured through vaccines because I was back in 2012. And 2015, I had another vaccination, not a vaccine injury, but a medication injury. And it left me 70% deaf in my left ear and almost 50% deaf in my right ear.
Mm-hmm.
So I could hear a little bit. I have your volume turned all the way up so I could hear you. But I also read lips as well. So
your family
mm-hmm.
Has been a victim, I want to say, of the pharmaceutical industry
yeah.
by injection, by, you know, was what hurt your hearing? Was it a nasal spray or was it one of their tablets?
I think it was one of their tablets. We got it from one of those emergency care places because I was mm-hmm. having asthma attacks.
Right.
And they wanted to give me something because I had a cold as well. But mm-hmm. when I took this specific medicine, it basically burned out the balance and the nerves inside my ear
mm-hmm.
where I suffered from vertigo for 4 days straight. And it was right. bad vertigo. Right.
And I'll guarantee you, if yeah. you had that package insert and you look that up, that is definitely one of the side effects of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going at, you know, every day right now. And I have another case going on right now. It's for my Social Security disability. I've been fighting that for damn near 10 years right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they owe me a lot of back pay.
Right. And
so I got a really good lawyer from the Poconos from Scranton, Pennsylvania. And just, I'll let you know how that goes, but it looks pretty good. So
right.
It's on like my third appeal already. So.
And that's one of the things too, that, you know, a lot of people don't understand is that you can have a condition that qualifies you to get disability, medical disability for an actual thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Something that's serious and severe.
Mm-hmm.
You can apply, they can deny it.
Yeah. And they have.
You can apply, you can appeal, you can do all that stuff. But the one that goes through literally all the time and they never fight it is anything mental health.
Okay, well, they've denied me three times already, and that includes my mental health. And I do suffer from depression, stress, and anxiety, dangerously.
Right.
So my new attorney's been bringing that up to the appeals board down in Falls Church, Virginia. So hopefully they'll finally get their asses in gear, you know, pardon my French.
Well,
I am Canadian-French, so I could actually say that.
They don't want to pay out. Disability, even though they literally take, you know, their share out of your paycheck, every paycheck that you get.
Yeah.
And then to get on disability, it is very difficult. And
it is.
Few people ever go through the first time. Mm-hmm. And they'll,
because
my favorite thing they say is, it's not bad enough.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I show them, look, my previous cases was I was coming in there, I was wearing forearm crutches that just clip on the forearms and I could like kind of hobble my way in there.
Right.
I'm in a wheelchair now. I'm losing my ability to walk.
Right. And it's I definitely want to talk about that today and what you have gone through. The process throughout your life and why in the world some paper pusher, you know, gets your application for disability and it's like, oh, it's not bad enough. Well, hello, I can't walk.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a problem. And that's a common thing. And I can tell you that from being a nurse for a really long time and helping patients file for disability or fight disability, appeal cases, get records together for the court because there were patients that had like massive grand mal seizures all the time.
Yeah.
And they were so bad and they had like stimulator implants in their brain and the whole nine yards. And they're like, well, it's not bad enough. And they're like, I can't work. I can't drive. Yeah. Like I can't. It's not safe for me to be outside of this space. And they're like, well, I'm really sorry, but it just doesn't sound that bad to me.
Right. I mean,
be me for a day.
I have conditions that I'll probably turn your hair white.
Right.
I don't want to waste all your time by listing them all and how they affect me every day, but I'm just trying to survive here. And hey, I'm not going to go for any extra money, like interesting, just pay what I'm owed. That's what I want.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. But if I'm going to get mean, I might give them a middle finger sometime. But, that's just between
I'll
me.
I'll give them one camera. For you. How about that?
Please.
Okay. So let's talk about your wife and what was going on with her knee.
Okay. Back in, the early spring last year, she has arthritis in her knees, in both knees. But early spring, it started really getting bad. And last August, for our daughter's birthday, we went to the local mall outside Philadelphia area called King of Prussia Plaza. It's the biggest mall in America. Actually, bigger than the Mall of America by just how many stores it has.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked the whole thing and did about 5 miles inside. And at the end of that, she was really hurting. I could tell. I felt bad. I wanted to give her my old wheelchair so that she could be in, but then I wouldn't be able to walk. So we arrange everything and start going to see a great knee doctor here. And he's like, well, we can't really do the knee surgery until you actually want to. Mm-hmm. You have to have like your mind set to. Yeah, that was a big thing. So in October, she decides to have her left knee done. And what happened was my wife has a condition where, you know, she also has arthritis in her thumbs, mm-hmm. where she had to have the bone removed.
And the joints.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, she had both those done, but when she had the operation, they blew up, got all blistered and infected, both of them, and they had no idea why. Well, they finally figured out that it might have been something that she was allergic to, but they really didn't know. But it went away with her, and both her hands are fine now. And so when she had the knee done, the same thing happened. And like within a couple days, like she went through the operation fine. And the guy was phenomenally good. She went through the operation fine, but when she was recovering, the knee swelled up, her leg swelled up. It was nearly twice the size as it was, and developed blisters and all, and we thought she was going to get sepsis. So we went to an emergency room, and they're like, all right, well, let's get her upstairs. There were so many people in the emergency room, we had to have her bed in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was they finally got her into a room. All these specialists were saying there was two different allergic reactions that she had. She's allergic to penicillin. And one of the drugs that they gave her was like the cousin to penicillin.
Mm-hmm.
It was only like connected like one branch away from being penicillin. But it was still like related to it. So it didn't show up as being allergic. It just happened to join like that. It was like the third cousin of mm-hmm. penicillin or something like that, married twice after. So she was given that, and her leg blew up, blistered up. And she had to go back in because she was starting to get hives. And that's bad. So when we got her in there, she was in there from Saturday until like that following Friday. And every day, me and Rachel, that's our daughter, we were there by her side, like 12 hours for Rachel. And I stayed there almost 20 hours every day, just praying. And I'm like, oh my God, please heal my wife. Right?
Mm-hmm.
She's my everything. And I love her as much as I could possibly love someone.
Right.
About how Christ loves us.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Christ that much as well. But I show my love to my wife that much. And by the time Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday start coming around, I think she had like four or five different specialists going through all these tests, all these blood tests and fluid works and all the things that they would show. Everything kept coming back clean. But my wife's leg looks like it's going to fall off.
Right.
But it's all the tests are coming back positive. There's nothing wrong. And we just kept praying. All of a sudden, the leg started looking better. The blotches were coming out. I mean, her leg was as beet red as my sweatshirt here. I mean, it was bad. I mean, we thought she was going to die from the poisons.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I'm getting choked up about it now. But it's just so incredible that God healed her like that. He heard our prayers.
Mm-hmm.
And that he healed her so much. I literally watched her leg getting smaller, getting better, getting more motion into it. And then the real work happened after we got out of the hospital where she started the physical therapy. I watched her like a hawk. I wasn't kind to her at all. And she was able to get her leg going, get her knee going. After that, no problems with it. It's just a really little scar, like maybe that long. Mm-hmm. And you could barely see it on her knee. She's getting around better than I ever could. And I'm kind of jealous. But the only thing is that she's a little scared getting the other one done.
Right.
She feels that if the bone itself gets operated on, like when you have your knee replaced,
mm-hmm.
there's something about that procedure where the bone is like touched or messed with or operated on that it causes a trigger in her body and she goes and blows up and all that junk starts happening again. So mm-hmm. she's really scared about doing the other one. I don't blame her.
Right. But absolutely.
That shows just how amazing God is. I literally seen it with my own two eyes. About
healing. And especially when, you know, you have all of these doctors, right? I call them practitioners because they practice at trying to figure out what is wrong. Mm-hmm. And you have all these specialists and they're going, yep, I don't, let's try X, Y, and Z because this was fine. So let's try this one. Okay. That was fine too. I don't know. What do you think? Yeah. And it's like, they can't figure things out.
Yeah.
And so you have to turn to prayer in a lot of those situations to be able to heal the body. And that's exactly what he wants us to do.
Yeah. I mean, the doctors that he had surrounding us were incredible. I mean, the orderlies were super nice. The nurses were great. I mean, I was basically praying with the nurses right there next to me. And I'm glad that they accepted it. I always ask people if I could pray with them as I'm praying for my wife. Mm-hmm. And they're like, sure, no problem. That's great. The doctors were really supportive of that.
I mean, that's good.
I was amazed. You know, God says to pray when, like, you have something with your body. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say what God can and cannot do. I mean, he might reach down and just tap you right there and heal you right there. Mm-hmm. Or he puts great doctors in your path.
Right.
That they could heal you through him. Mm-hmm. They could use what they know as their gift through God to heal you.
Right.
You're not going to sit here and not take your medicine, not follow doctors. You're like, I'm just going to sit here and believe in God's going to heal me. He's giving you somebody to help heal you. Mm-hmm. So don't discount that fact at all. I mean, about God's healing, I mean, I'm a practical walking example of that. I mean, I don't want to brag on myself, but it's not my strength. It's God's strength that strengthens me. And I just want to give God all the glory for that.
Right.
I don't want any of it. I mean, if you look past me, I don't want you seeing me. I want you to see God healing me, using me as his vessel to tell you how good he is.
So I want to ask you about you, because I know when we talked before, we had discussed like you were a premature baby.
Yep.
And then sometime along the way, they diagnosed you with something. What did they tell you? And what age were you? And what kind of symptoms were you having before you were diagnosed?
Yeah, that's fine. You could still hear me, correct? And that the audio is fine, all that?
Okay, yeah.
I'm just making sure. Like I told you before, I tend to mumble. So if something doesn't come out quite clear, just let me know and I'll repeat it.
You're fine.
Okay. I was born August 10th, 1967. I was premature. I was supposed to be born November 14th, but I was born August 10th. I was 1 pound, 14 ounces.
So you were a little feller.
Yeah. Yeah. I literally fell out of my mom, basically. And that's like a family joke that we have now. Like, yeah, I fell out of my mom. I tried escaping at that young age. When my dad held me, my dad was 6'2", about 252. So he was a big guy. My shoulders were probably that wide.
Right.
My skin was clear. You could see my lungs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the NICU probably until like December, January of that year. And my mom was in there every day. And she was praying over me every day. The doctors said I wouldn't live past, I wouldn't become a normal baby. I would be deaf and dumb and blind. I wouldn't be able to see or talk or anything like that. I wouldn't be able to walk, even function out here in society. Yeah, that's not even a given that they gave me. So I guess about 56, 57 years, I've done okay so far. So far, I've outlived those doctors.
Right.
I still have records set at where I was born at that hadn't been touched yet. Yeah, that I was so early when I was born, hardly nobody else was close to that, like from passing away or living.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, my mom, it's going into my family history. she had a baby before me and one after me, but they both perished before they were born. You know, there was miscarriages.
Mm-hmm.
I somehow survived. God had a plan for me.
So right. Absolutely.
Who am I to ask? You know? And every day, I kind of knew I was always different. You know, like, oh, here he goes. Different, you know, the family embarrassment here. No, but I guess mentally that way, where I was always picked on all my life, come from family abuse. And I guess I was like 10 or 11, maybe I was 12. I was like, you know, Lord, you know, I've always known about God. I've always known about Jesus. But I was never a Christian until I was 18. I said, look, as much as I'm being picked on down here because of how I am, I don't ever want to mess with somebody else because of that.
Right.
I don't want to put anybody through the same pain I've gone through.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to treat anybody like that. And that's the way I always was. My wife kind of calls it like an old soul, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess more mature than
I would say wise soul.
Yeah.
Wise, definitely.
Well, if you ever seen my brain, you'll wonder how the hell that happened.
I've seen many a brain in my life.
Yeah, the abnormal ones too.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes not.
Mm-hmm. Or as Steve Martin would put in Man with Two Brains. I love that guy. You know, unscrew the head, pop the other one out, put the other one in, screw it back on, you know, secure with Velcro.
You ever wonder if some people might actually do things like that?
I wouldn't doubt it. You know, pull the Velcro tab, you know. You know, and just empty out the brain, put in the new one, you know, by Musk or something, you know, the new digital one that he wants.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That guy is brilliant in some things, but man, some things I just want to stay well away from.
You and me both. I have no desire to.
I like the cars they make. I mean, I love technology and that kind of thing, but if I can't drive it, I still want to be in control of something, even though it might be a Tesla 3 or Tesla S or something. I still want to drive the car and enjoy
it. Same, yeah.
I like the technology, but I also love old muscle cars. Yeah, I was raised around them. I love them.
I would prefer that any day over a Tesla.
Yeah. I mean, give me a car with a manual transmission or a truck or a semi. I could drive practically anything with a manual transmission. Mm-hmm. I love driving. And there's only a few things people are really good at. Mine's driving. But keeping jobs, that's another struggle I've really had a lot. And people always wonder, you know, like, is he all there for some reason? I mean, I've lost jobs because I've been such a good driver. I didn't get all my jobs done. But, of course, I never got speeding tickets or wrecked the trucks or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
One job I had, I was hauling stone for a highway project, you know, over the next county. And it was a new site, so I wasn't sure, you know, where they wanted me to dump the stone, where they wanted to work everything. So I pulled my dump truck up. I asked the guy in the white hat, you know, the supervisor, make like $80,000 an hour there. I said, where do you want me to put the stone? He looks at me and says, are you all there? I said, let me get this straight. I'm driving a 73,000-pound truck filled with stone. I did a damn good job, and you're asking me if I'm all there? Let me grab the shovel here, and then you wrap it around your head and see if you can think I'm all there. Mm-hmm. Tell you what, go stand where you want the stone at. I'll pull it right to your feet. I damn near ran over his toes when I dumped all that stone. I buried him up to his knees.
Well, he is not a nice person.
No.
Because in what world is that okay?
I know.
To say or do to another mm-hmm. human being.
Oh, yeah. I've had bosses that were so mean, they would dress me down every day, despite my jobs getting all done, where I just wasn't fast enough. I'm like, I'm not like these other drivers that wreck their trucks and get like 3 or 4 speeding tickets or get their truck impounded. I do my job. I do it well. I enjoy doing my job.
So
if you don't like that, I could find another job somewhere else.
So let me ask you, being so, you know, premature when you were born mm-hmm. and very underweight, obviously.
Yeah.
Did you have any effects that followed you like throughout life?
Oh, yeah.
With that.
I have balance issues still. I got a fairly good memory, but when you could hear me talking now, I always make a space. Like there's always a pause when I talk. I had a huge stuttering problem. I could barely get two or three words out. But how my mom helped me with that was she always had hot tea, which I loved. She said, you gotta have a sip of hot tea if you can tell me a sentence without stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, I did. I worked at it. And I still pause now and then. It's just my brain knows what I want to say. It's just my mouth can't catch up.
Well, and I would think that a lot of that has to do with the oxygenation that you were deprived of when you were that underweight and that premature, mm-hmm. you know, because the lungs aren't fully developed, you know, the airway's not fully developed. Everything's not fully developed when you're that little. And mm-hmm. so, you know, whether it's cognitive function or speech patterns or, you know, muscles or anything mm-hmm. in your body, I can understand why that would be affected.
Now, you asked about, you know, my physical problems. I was initially diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. But when I was going through my court cases and seeing other neurologists, only like maybe 6-7 years ago, I always thought I had muscular dystrophy, but a really good neurologist.
Because that's what you were told.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
Mm-hmm.
I told a neurologist that, and he's like, no, he's like, you have more like cerebral palsy. And he was going through like a checklist and he was showing me. I was like, mm-hmm. yeah, checking off all these check marks. It's like, let me see you walk a little bit. I walked and I teeter-tottered. I did the toddler, you know, wobble that they do. And mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, you got cerebral palsy. I'm like, huh, okay. So that's another thing on my medical history I could check off as having.
Mm-hmm.
But that actually answered a lot of questions I have. And that was a huge help because, you know, now I could see it in myself. Because the doctor always said my muscular dystrophy wasn't big enough or effective enough where mm-hmm. it showed up on me. But I guess they never just considered cerebral palsy.
Diagnosing today is very different from diagnosing in the past.
Yeah.
Because they would look at you and assumptive diagnose.
Yeah.
You know, there's no definitive test for a lot of things back in the day and still isn't. And they'd be like, oh, well, you know, have this symptom or this looks a little odd. So you have to have
A, B, C, or D.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So old were you when you first noticed like the balance problems and the, you know, issues walking and whatever and went to the doctor for the first time when they were like, you know, you have muscular dystrophy.
I guess I was like before school started for me. I guess I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Gotcha.
And I've always thought, yeah, I was, you know, handicapped. So I was actually treated in my family where I didn't have any kind of disability. Mm-hmm. I just had to be like my older brother.
They didn't want to accept it.
Right. And it was all this time, even up to a couple years ago. My therapist, a damn great therapist I had for almost 8 years, I love her to death. She said it was something called like Munchausen syndrome, but by proxy.
Right.
So my mom was the one that was the victim.
Right.
However, I was the one that was disabled and getting all the crap dumped on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what it meant. I've never heard of that before.
Oh, yeah. That's a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's certainly something that's really affected me all these years.
So,
yeah,
growing up, I know you said that there was abuse in the household.
Yeah.
Was it just mental abuse or physical abuse or both?
It was a bit of both. My dad was more of the physical side. My mom was more of the mental side. Where it would be something like, just be like more like your brother. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my brother Mike's a successful one. He's a police officer now.
Right.
And my sister was the pretty one. And then there's me. And, you know, like whenever you have the old VHS cassettes, you know, that, you know, each copy makes a just a little bit less quality.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and Dana, you know, their names are like copy A and D. I'm like down here near G somewhere. That's how bad I thought I was.
But you know what? I just want to tell you, I commend you for being able to go through life, to get through life, because you have had challenges.
Yeah.
Literally since the moment that you were born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have such like a gentle way about you and such a beautiful heart that you have been blessed with.
Thank you.
That you've endured all this. And I'm sure that's where a lot of depression and anxiety and stuff comes from, because there was so much trauma, not just from birth, mm-hmm. but growing up in a household where you're not accepted for you, like you're putting them out.
Yeah.
Because you're different. That's not any fault of yours.
Mm-hmm. I didn't ask to be born this way, but I was.
Right.
And God even accepted me like that.
Right. Absolutely.
And he accepts us all for who we are, faults mm-hmm. and everything.
And he makes us who we are and the way that we are for his purpose and his reason.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and you are a living, breathing testament
mm-hmm.
of his will and his power and strength that he puts forth through you.
Yeah.
To and endure his grace. All of these things.
And his grace, especially.
Mm-hmm.
He Absolutely. Didn't have to. He's Father God. He could do anything he wants. He could finish off the universe tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his will. That's fine. He's God. He could do it. But he loves us.
So,
to such a degree, we can't even fathom yet. I see glimpses exactly. of it through my daughter or through my wife or through our two rabbits that we have. Just enjoying the small things.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said we're just so busy
for everything.
We miss them.
Right. And,
but I guess it takes somebody that can slow down a little bit. Like, hey, God, I love that sunrise you just gave me today, or watching the snowfall last week, which I loved. I like watching snowfall. I just hate shoveling it.
Yeah. Exactly. Same.
Yeah. I got to put a snowplow in my wheelchair and I could do the driveway in like 4 or 5 passes and that's about it. Yeah. Maybe get some studded snow tires on my wheelchair here.
There you go. You might have to install some chains and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like
I actually got a little motor for it back here. It clips onto the back of my chair and then I got one of those power chairs. It does like 5 miles per hour. I chase my wife through the mall with it now.
There you go. So let me ask you. When you're diagnosed, right, and you're going through life and you're still struggling, because I'm sure at the time, being the way that things were, they didn't know what to do with you, right?
Right.
The doctors didn't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
And so continuing to struggle with issues of walking mm-hmm. and balance and things like that, did you go to the doctor regularly or...
Well,
was it kind of like one of those things where let's push it under the rug because we're embarrassed?
Yeah, I think that was more the case right there. I would only go to the doctor like if it felt my arm was falling off
mm-hmm.
and they had to, you know, zip tie it or tie it together with piano wire and Velcro and say, okay, you're healed. Get out
right.
of the door. Yeah, we didn't really make that much. I mean, we're like low, like the lowest middle income that you could get.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had a good job. My mom worked 2 jobs. And she was a restaurant manager and all that. My dad worked Scott Paper for like 15, 20 years. He was a cop also before that. So, I mean, they always worked. Then my dad got hurt. And my mom had worked 2 jobs to keep all the insurance going. So I didn't really go to the doctor that often.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't really afford it. So
yeah, we didn't either. If you were not bleeding from every orifice in your body.
Yeah.
Or you didn't have a limb hanging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You weren't going anywhere.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, oh, that's up. Like, you know.
Yeah, it was like, suck it up and get through it no matter what it was.
Exactly, and I heard that so much.
Right.
And even after I graduated from school, I'm not a brainiac, I'm not a geek. I didn't fail anything, but I didn't excel at anything either. I was just told by my mom, you know, just get a job, get a full-time job. And, you know, like my brother, you know, he was working full-time, then he got a car for Christmas. Me, I got like a video game, like some kind of cardboard guitar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's like you always have that battle between your sister and your brother trying right. to fit in. And, you
know, and the favoritism levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so my family, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So you understand. Yeah. You know, I'm the baby, but I wasn't spoiled. Believe me, I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I always had all the hand-me-downs, and I was just saying, hey, mm-hmm. just don't complain about it. Just be happy that you got jeans this year.
Right.
Yeah. You know, all that. Yeah. Then, I've only had like two or three girlfriends. That was all I had. I'm not like these guys in school always have like two or three girlfriends on each hip every other week. You know, mm-hmm. I couldn't have that. I'm not smart enough to do that. And
I wouldn't want to do that. That would be way too stressful.
It would be.
Women can be very stressful. So one is plenty.
Yeah. I was seeing somebody back in the 90s, and no offense, she was a redhead, Irish, Scottish, and English. So that was a hell of a mix.
Fiery temper.
Exactly. Exactly. She was very competitive. I don't know if I ought to mention names, you know, protect those that are guilty. You know, mm-hmm. I'll just call her Cindy. So, yes, that's her real name. So,
I'll call her Cindy. Wink, wink.
Yeah, wink, wink. Yeah, here. Wink, wink. Yeah. And she was really competitive. And we actually took karate together. If you believe that. This is when I can actually walk a little bit better. But we took a style of karate called Kenpo. It was really a defensive system, but I loved it. It was really applicable. You know, I could do it during my job if I had to. I was mm-hmm. a security guard back then. And one day, the whole gym class knew we were a couple. We were engaged. And she was really competitive, like I said. She doesn't like having the best get over her. You know what I mean? So she was, you know, we would make a gauntlet of two rows of students, and you would have to go in the gauntlet. And every time somebody, you would come up to somebody, do like a fist punch or something, they'd have to block you and mm-hmm. counter. Well, I was in the gauntlet. Here comes Cindy. You know, quote unquote, wink, wink.
Cindy, whose name is not really Cindy.
Right. Or it could be. That's only for me to know. And she throws a punch. I block. Then she counters and pops me right in the nose. And I'm like, yeah, fall back on my ass. And everybody's like, ooh, you know, like, oh my God. Ooh. And the instructor, he's like a 15th degree black belt. His black belt's so worn, it's practically gray. You know, he's just looking on. He doesn't really get a whole emotional or anything like that. And they're like, all right, well, what's he going to do next? So I go through the gauntlet. She comes up. I throw a punch. She throws a punch. I counter. How I counter? I grab her by the top. Now, she was only 5'3". And I lift her up off her feet, and I go... And I drop her on her ass. She chased me through that gym for 5 minutes.
Kung Fu kisses.
Yeah. Fatality. The instructor was holding his ribs, crying against the mirrors. That's how funny he thought that was. She was like one of these girls said, I am woman, hear me roar. Mm-hmm. And I'll go, meow. So
how long was your relationship with this girl, and what happened in this relationship?
We had a relationship for 7 years, and I've known her for 7 years. I think I was engaged to her for like 4 years. Mm-hmm. I gave her a diamond ring and all that. And what had happened was cheated on me. And every time she would be somewhere out, or I had to pick her up from work, she was always somewhere else. Then I found out from a mutual friend of ours that she was seeing anybody she can between weekends or weekdays, where I picked her up on the weekend from work. Mm-hmm. She was seeing other people. So I'm like, look, I'm not even going to compete with that. Just getting back the ring, and we'll call it even.
Right.
Make it a day. And she loved going to the churches. You know, she was Christian as well, but she liked all the excitement of the churches like Kenneth Copeland and like the miracle churches,
you know, right.
The laying on hands or speaking in tongues.
I call it false prophecy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I was even into that for like 10 years when I became a Christian in 1985 at a Amy Grant concert, actually.
Right.
Probably one of the best concerts I've ever seen. And I was going to these faith healing churches because my mom was a member of them.
Right.
So I naturally had to go with her. Mm-hmm. So I was drug into that. I was all the way into it. I just couldn't pray in tongues. I just couldn't do it. It just always felt wrong.
Right. And we had talked about this before. Like, it takes a gift from God. It's a spiritual gift where you are able to actually do that. That's not something that's learned behavior.
Right.
And then to be able to also have somebody that's there that interprets it, because scripture is very clear about the fact, don't speak in tongues if there's no one there to hear it that understands it.
Right. Then all of a sudden, like the pastor up there would say, oh, God is saying this. Like, oh, Joe Bullard, come up here. God wants to heal you. Of course, I was pressured to go up when I was called up there, especially when Benny Hinn was there.
Mm-hmm.
That guy is none but
false prophet.
Like Kenneth Copeland and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that happened, I'm not sure I had to say I was feeling good. I didn't want to embarrass Benny Hinn, of course.
Mm-hmm. We wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. And after I got out of that, and he said, oh, you're healed. You know, he waved his coat around, and he's like, you're healed. And it's like, I didn't feel anything, but I didn't want to embarrass myself or him in front of the whole place. It was packed. So I played the play, and I, you know, did like a happy dance going off the stage and everything. And it just felt horrible. My spirit was troubled.
Right.
My spirit was saying, look, this
is not right.
It's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the Holy Ghost laughter. That was a big thing back then. Holy Ghost glue, rolling yourself up and down the aisle, sticking to the walls. I was witnessing all this, and it generally scared me.
Mm-hmm.
It frightened me. And they said, this was godly? This was of the Holy Spirit?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
You're kidding me. And it's not. I left after that. That's when I was with the redhead.
Mm-hmm.
And man, she hated that I left. She hated it. Now I went to another church called Calvary Chapel.
Oh, yeah. I'm very familiar with that.
Yep. There was one guy on the radio I listened to ever since I became saved, Joe Foch, in Northeast Philadelphia.
Right.
He's got the classic stereo voice, the classic radio voice. He was like the hippie generation that got saved.
Mm-hmm.
Then every Sunday he would come out. His church is at an old meter factory in Philadelphia. Great guy. I wish I could still see him. I listen to him online still. And he always come out dressed in a Hawaiian shirt and jeans.
Mm-hmm.
That's my kind of pastor.
Well, that conversation a lot because for me, living down south, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many churches around here, like there's like a church on every corner.
Yeah.
But
like a Walmart.
They're so like dress code everywhere to the, you dress to the nines and you have to wear, you know, a suit and tie and all this other stuff. And I'm like, first off, God said, come as you are.
Yeah.
God did not say, go buy the fanciest clothes that you could find to come to church in.
Yeah.
In a building, mind you. You know, and so I've always had a problem with churches that don't accept you for whatever you wear.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're not there to dress to impress God.
Right.
Right. It's like they want you there to dress to impress each other.
Yeah.
And that's wrong. just wrong.
I've seen that so much, and it drove me crazy. Like, right. Man, they're always, you know, saying, oh, tithe 10%. And right. I was making enough money to afford Pampers,
right?
Mind you. So, I mean, we gave what we could. God saw that we wanted to give, but we just didn't have enough to give.
But you know what the problem is with tithing?
Yeah.
Tithing is not all about money.
Right.
Tithing is your time. Mm-hmm. It's goods. It's exactly. service to others. It's yeah. literally any reason that God has put you on this planet.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to do with money. Mm-hmm. People that have been blessed with the, you know, the spiritual gift of giving.
Yeah.
Those are the people that mm-hmm. that he calls on to give money to the church.
Yeah.
Normal and, everyday people are not those people.
Right. And people like Kenneth Copeland, who's now an actual billionaire.
Right.
Because exactly. I followed him since the 80s. I got out of watching him in the mid 90s as well.
Right.
I've seen clips of him now. Mm-hmm. He looks demonic.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually said on one of his programs that he prays to Satan.
Yeah.
He does.
That's why I said false prophet earlier.
And I tell you, it's like there's an NXS song. I forget what it's called. But there's a line in it saying that when the people in hell are burning, their fire's going to be burning the brightest,
mm-hmm.
meaning probably the false prophets or the people that's deceived the word.
Absolutely,
for
it
their
is.
Benefit
mm-hmm.
and not for ours.
They absolutely, it is.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm in a wheelchair now. I'm afraid to go to some of these churches. They're like, oh, you're not holy enough, or God doesn't love you because he hasn't healed you. Well, actually,
not even true.
Yeah, maybe God is using me with my wheelchair to show his strength.
As his vessel.
Mm-hmm. And I don't mind being in a wheelchair. I mean, since I've gotten, well, this is actually a new wheelchair. It's probably only a month old. The other one got repossessed, if you could believe that one.
Yeah, you could. You have to share that story too, because okay. I think a lot of people don't realize that that actually happens.
It does.
With medical devices. It does. All the time.
I've shown you pictures of my wheelchair. It's actually called Tylite. It's a fixed chair, but the back folds down and the wheels come off so I could transport it easily. Mm-hmm. But we have a minivan, so I just throw it right in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I did have another wheelchair that, what it was, is my health insurance. And we're on Medicaid, you know, mm-hmm. Medicare, whatever right. one is for low income. That's, right. that's what we have. Well, for some reason, my Social Security disability case was approved last year, but then they reversed the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened over like a month's time last year in April.
They said, you're approved. And then they said, just kidding. No, you're not. Yeah.
It's like the guy in Airplane, if you remember the aircraft tower guy.
Mm-hmm.
When the plane's coming in, you know, it's like the wings are falling off. All of a sudden, the runway lights disappear. He's like, unplug. Uh-huh. Oh, sorry, just kidding. Plug back in.
I love Airplane. That's so funny.
Yeah. I love comedies like that. You know, Airplane, like I said, Steve Martin, the mm-hmm. jerk.
Right.
I actually have his own book, Born Standing Up. It's probably the most funny book I've ever read yet. And I'm sorry we got off the trail here. Could you remind me what we're talking about? Oh, the wheelchair. See, there you go.
Wait a minute.
My brain
unplug, reboot.
That direction somewhere sometimes. You just got to help steer it back in, you know.
We could be in deep doo-doo then, because I have can't remember, you know, what syndromes.
Guilty as charged. Arrest me now.
It's all the old age brain poop that's in there. That's what it is.
Well, the thing is, I think I'm a little bit older than you are.
2 years. That's
2 years.
It.
Okay. Well, I thought it was at least 15, you know, by how good you look.
That's not true. Nope.
I'm kissing up to the host here. Okay? Just trying to make things look good for me. All right. This is my first time on doing a damn interview. Okay. Just don't tell my wife.
Shh.
I won't tell. But you'll
tell us about the wheelchair incident.
Okay. Well, like I said, last year around April, I was accepted for the wheelchair. They did all the measurements for me, went to the doctor, and they said, all right, your leg is this long, and your hips are this size, and you can sit back at this degree. And they put in for a wheelchair made by Tilite, T-I-L-I-T-E. And usually their chairs are made of titanium, but since my insurance was so cheap, they said, oh, you can only get aluminum. Okay, well, I don't mind. At least not one of those 80-pound hospital wheelchairs.
I was going to say that's not going to bend when I sit in it.
Right. Well, it's certainly ain't going to bend with my skinny ass when it hits it. You know. The kind of ass I have, it's non-existent practically. My legs just grow out of my back. They just bend. There's no butt cheeks back there. You know? When I'm sitting, I got to have some kind of cushion down there because it ain't going to hurt within 5 minutes. You know? And so after about, you know, this, my measurements happened in that December. Then that April, this place calls me and says, oh, your wheelchair is going to be here next week. All right. Well, thank you for calling and letting me know all this time. Okay.
Right.
So the
and it took a long time because they had to measure and build it for you.
Yeah. Right. And they did. And right. They did. And the chair was nice itself. And I had the wheelchair for about 5 months. And all through this time, they kept having problems with my insurance. I kept calling my insurance. I'm like, look, I have a wheelchair that got paid for, but it's not getting paid for by the people that built it.
Right.
They want the bill paid for. I'm like, well, call Social Security. I called them. Call your local town for welfare. I called them.
Right.
They keep giving the other number saying, here, call them. So it's right. Like, he phone said, tag. She said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, look, if this is still going to be a problem, I told the people that bought the wheelchair over here that if I have to have it taken, you know, come back, take it. I'm not going to be a problem because I didn't have enough money to pay for the wheelchair.
Right.
And they said, okay, well, last September, they came by and they said, look, we're going to have to take your chair back. Okay, I'm going to have to walk around again.
I was going to say this, so they shoved you out on the floor and took your chair.
Practically. And they even came up with a little mini, tow truck with a real little hook on the back. Mm-hmm. Ended up taking the chair on the hook and putting it in the van and taking off with it.
Right.
Now, when I actually had the chance to have some money come in, which I did a couple months ago for my mom's house selling after she passed away in 2019, I was able to buy the chair. So I called these people up saying, hey, I can buy the chair with cash. When do you want me to come in and pick it up? They said, oh, we don't take cash. We don't sell to people outright. We only use insurance.
Right. And you're like, huh?
Yeah. I'm like, look, I have cash here. I'm like, I'm holding a couple $1,000s right here in my hand. Can I give it to you somehow? Can I break into your office and steal it maybe?
Well, and here is a question, okay? Uh-huh. So they have to measure you to fit you for this wheelchair, right? Because they're custom making it for you.
Exactly.
So they repossess the wheelchair. What the hell do they do with them after they repossess them when they're custom made for somebody?
That is the winning question there. You won $64,000. There you go. Excellent question.
What do you do? Just chuck it in the garbage?
I guess. I mean, that they have another wheelchair there that's exactly my size, and they can't sell it to me. So what I did was, when I got the cash from my mom's estate settling, I went to Tilite myself and bought a new wheelchair through another distributor, paying cash.
Mm-hmm.
The chair I have now, it's right here. It's exactly like the old one. It just has a couple more options I wanted. Well, no power windows were available, sadly. So.
And no air conditioning unit?
No, that comes from my ass when I fart and I get pushed over about 20 yards. Yeah, exactly.
That's what the motor was you were talking about.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, well, I ended up buying the motor on top of that because we had to spend down.
Then you can go really fast.
Yeah, about 5 miles per hour faster. I was trying to wheel my ass around this apartment. I got to take a drink. My voice is dry.
Not a problem. So I'm curious because you were diagnosed at a very early age.
Yeah.
And then you weren't wearing leg braces or anything, right?
No.
So you worked your entire life. You walked, you moved, you always held a job. You worked heavy labor. I'm sure you hurt.
I did all
like a son of a gun
all the time.
And they can't treat you because they don't know what to do. And then they're like, whoopsie, we made the wrong diagnosis.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's something else. When did it get to the point where, because I know that you had, you know, the walking crutches with the, arm braces first. Mm-hmm. How old were you when you're like, I can't just function like a normal, whatever. I can't take that anymore.
It was all starting back around 2010, 2011, when I changed jobs yet again. You know how somebody always has like maybe three or four jobs in their lifetime and they stay with them all this time.
Mm-hmm.
They find the one job that they're good at and they stay there till they retire.
Right.
The way I'm put together mentally and the way I am, I've had nearly 40 jobs, full-time jobs, where I'd have to pick one up and work at it for a couple of months. I end up losing it because of my disabilities. I couldn't function fast enough. Or for some reason, I actually found another job that was actually paying a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I've done everything from pumping gas to installing tires to working armed security. I was a armored car driver back in the 90s in Philadelphia, and that's when they had the huge wave of armored car robberies in 99.
Right.
And turns out two of the guys that I know and two other branches going through Philadelphia, they were shot and killed. And I feel terrible for that. One time in 99, the feds called our branch office in New Jersey, said, look, this one truck that's going to be on the New Jersey Turnpike, you let them know to keep going. Do not stop at this exit because we're watching this guy. This guy's going to make a hit on your truck. He said, keep going. Do not stop. And that's what we did. I mean, they got the call to our driver. He was driving. I was the nutcase in the back with the shotgun.
That'd be my job.
Yeah. And that was between when I was with my ex and before I met my wife.
Right.
That was the 3.5 years where, pardon my saying, I didn't give a shit what happened.
I was going to say you were in self-destruct mode at that time.
I was thoroughly in self-destruct mode where I didn't give a shit. And I didn't care. I was making $10 an hour back then, working 60, 70 hours a week.
Right.
And I was coming home, falling asleep, and getting up, going to work again.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for nearly 2 years.
Right.
And when I found out that guys in Philadelphia were killed, and two of them were really good friends of mine, I miss them to death. I mean, I really do. They they were such good guys. All because people are greedy.
Right.
I know that the vans carried that much money. The way I looked at it, it was just paper. It wasn't worth anything to me. Why would I risk a federal charge going to jail or dying?
I was going to say, and it's insured anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
but these guys' lives weren't.
Point? Yeah.
And they were just like, well, sorry, hire somebody else.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I was broken up by that. I was like, I'm sorry. I had to leave. I had a nervous breakdown that summer.
Mm-hmm.
I had to quit. Then in 2010, 2011, after I was a truck driver for all these years, I drove all local. I drove, man, I had been nearly 200,000 miles, all local, all driving tractor trailers or dump trucks and all, which I loved. I loved it. But around 2012, I actually had to go to another job. I had to take an MMR vaccine.
Measles, mumps, and rubella. Yep.
Exactly. The only thing was I didn't realize I was allergic to it. When I got that, I developed severe asthma and I couldn't get out of bed for 4 days. Right after I was hired, I was given that. My wife found me on the bathroom floor, my feet sticking out of the door. She thought I died. She revived me. And ever since then, I had bad hacking coughs, and it's just this medication injured me. I didn't know how badly.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, I had to retire. I retired at the end of June 2012. And I started going after my Social Security disability and, you know, just using up all my workers' comp that I had, you know, a little mm-hmm. bit of it. Then all my unemployment, we had to use up.
Right.
We had an apartment. We had to keep it going. I didn't want to become homeless.
Right.
We ended up becoming homeless when everything ran out. And we made it through that through the grace of God as well. You mm-hmm. know, we got another apartment. We were put on the housing coupon, whatever it's called, the voucher list.
Right.
So we're living on a housing voucher now, and thankfully. And ever since 2014, 2016, 17, then when I had my balance issues with my hair, my vertigo that I have, it just got progressively on. I'm like, look, I can barely walk anymore. I just can't look for more work. And we now get Social Security income, SSI, me and my wife.
Right.
And that just barely keeps everything paid for. Keeps mm-hmm. all the bills paid for. And we still pray over everything. If we're given a little bit of blessing here or there,
mm-hmm.
we have it. Then with SSI rules, we always have to spend it down to right. like the minimum amount per month.
Right.
Or we'll be penalized. And that's yep. what we've been doing all these years. And it's not easy, but every day, every week, we're seeing God's grace,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a little bit extra food here or there, or like, oh, our food stamp's been cut back for $200 just this past month because the government's just going crazy with spending everything.
I was just going to say, but they're really good at spending our money overseas
yeah.
for
yeah.
stupid stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that and all the illegals flooding through the South right. and all that. I'm just disgusted by what's happening. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, other people say, oh, yeah, get ready, take up arms. You know, the Chinese are coming through your town tomorrow. Well, I have a case right here. It's full of my firearms that I now have.
Mm-hmm.
I now have 5 firearms. 2 are mine, 2 are my wife's. And 1 is for both of us that we both have.
Mm-hmm.
2.22s, 1.380, 2 9mm.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife's a very good shot. I got the targets right up there that you could see later if you want.
I'm a very good shot, too.
She loves shooting.
Mm-hmm.
She
loves so it. Do I.
Yeah,
it's very it. Addictive.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And my dad taught me how to shoot. That's one of the good things he taught me.
Mm-hmm.
And I love shooting. Took my wife out shooting. She started firing the little .22 that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. Just a little bit of recoil. I'm going to use that as my carry weapon mm-hmm. when I'm in my wheelchair.
Right.
She prefers my .380 I have. It's a Sig Sauer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really
Those
pretty.
Are nice.
I think you'll like it. It's like rainbow titanium colored.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. And my wife just shot our 9mm for the first time, the last time we went shooting at a nice range over here where we live. And the first time she shot it, she's like, boom.
Mm-hmm.
And she stands there for a second, then she turns back like, I like this.
Yeah, there's such a big difference between a 9mm and a .22.
Yeah.
Like, the kick and, you know, the yeah. sound and stuff is very, mm-hmm. very different.
Exactly.
But yeah. I'm not saying we do or don't have weaponry at our house. Yeah.
Oh, it's due to the boat accident and they all sunk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're very versatile though, because we also have different types of bows.
Yeah.
And stuff. So and target practice on those often. So.
Actually, when you bring up bows, one thing my dad had, my dad was a big guy. He was about 6'3", about 260, big guy. And this is during the 60s and 70s. He was a power builder. He was a muscle builder, mm-hmm. one of the big guys. He had a 56-inch chest.
Big guy.
Big guy. His arms were like this. Whenever I got him t-shirts, I mean, after all the abuse and after we grew up and everything, my dad got a lot more mild. He got really good to get along with. I was actually the only one that got along with him until he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And every time I bought him t-shirts, he always had to cut the sleeves to fit his arms into.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't damage his back, what happened was he ripped nearly all the vertebrae in his back, like two-thirds down his back, ripped all his vertebrae from weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to have his whole two-thirds section of his back from his waist to like middle of his rib cage fused.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he couldn't build himself any bigger. Strong as an ox, I tell you. He was the one that taught me how to shoot. And I love it. I was able to teach my wife how to shoot. I'm happy because now with all the crime going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's I don't see that getting any better.
I don't either.
When it's like letting all these criminals off because, you know, no cash bail and you know, releasing everybody right back onto the street or not arresting them at all.
Yeah.
Unless you're being arrested because you're going against
what the government wants.
Uh-huh.
Going against Biden. You know. And
going against nonsense. That's what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and actually in Revelations, the Bible doesn't mention anything about America. Because I think America is going to disappear mm-hmm. in the next bit.
Yeah.
You know, from all the invasions, all this, the Chinese, you know, or the powers from the north or from the east. It's all covered in Revelations, but that's just a whole complete other topic,
mm-hmm.
you know, about what's going on. And I listen to other radio programs and they talk a lot about Revelations and
right.
all that, which I listen to. And I love hearing that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's things that are happening now that are happening biblically. And I believe I'm probably one of the few that believe the Lord's going to come back anytime, right? Within weeks to maybe a few months, just mm-hmm. as how rotten the world's getting. I don't see us getting to another election. I really don't.
I think they're going to make it so that we don't have another one.
Right, right. And I think, yeah,
purposefully.
The war and all that. I haven't watched The Simpsons in like 30 years, so I don't know if they did any predictions about what's going to happen now.
Probably.
Yeah, but I bet they have them out there somewhere. Yeah, I mean, I'm all into the conspiracy theories, but now they're all conspiracy fact because they've all come true.
I just thought of something and I want to ask you this. This yeah. is backing up to your medical stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you get hired for a job, you lose a job because you're not fast enough because you have literally a disability.
Yeah.
Were these employers aware that you had a disability or did you ever say anything?
I didn't really want to say anything because I had ended up not getting hired anyway, but I had found a couple jobs that where I was required to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was good at those. I mean, I was a roaming guard through Philadelphia for a Mellon Bank, mm-hmm. you know, when that used to be Mellon. I would check all the bank offices in a certain area, and I'd go to another section, do those. Then at the end of the day, I'd head home.
Mm-hmm.
And I used my own car for that, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed going to the banks. Of course, I was armed.
Mm-hmm.
I never ran into any bank like holdups or anything like that.
Right.
Then after the 90s and the 2000s, after I got married, I'm like, well, what kind of job can I get that would pay the bills? I was like, well, I'm good at driving. And I tried driving trucks, you know, semi-trucks. I went to mm-hmm. school for that, paid for it myself, paid off the loan and everything, and got hired near the top of my class. I was immediately hired for places to go out to California, but I didn't take them because
I was going to say, you don't want to live in California. It's yeah. way too expensive there.
Yeah. And, you know, it'll be a route from California to back where
right.
I'd be home like maybe once every other month or something like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't do that. I just got married. I just had my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wouldn't know who I was when I came right. back.
Yep.
So that's part of what I prayed about, that I'd have all local jobs that would help pay the bills. And mm-hmm. of course, I went through them all as I could. I didn't tell anybody about my disabilities, but I'd say, yeah, I'm a little achy today. Or,
mm-hmm.
yeah, last night was kind of hard, yeah. But unloading and loading those semis, I did all that myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked, you know, hauling heating oil, you know, through the really big hoses and all that for houses. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I've done that through winters and trying to fit the little oil trucks back down these alleys where you could barely fit a mirror through. I've done that. And I know I didn't get all the jobs done, but there was no trucks that ever got a scratch run. I never got a ticket, never got an accident. Mm-hmm. So I could honestly say, you know, if I ever wanted to try venturing out myself, I'd put my driver's license up saying, hey, never a ticket, never an accident. You know, I'm a great driver. I'm just not very fast, but I'm a good driver. You're never going to have any insurance problems with me.
Right.
So I actually tried to put myself out there and make $30 an hour, just never was hired. So
with them, like here in recent history, mm-hmm. changing your diagnosis from what you thought it's been since like your whole life.
Yeah.
Is there anything they're doing for you or anything that they've suggested for you to do other than
a wheelchair? I have my wheelchair now, and since I have it, my balance is better because I don't have to walk everywhere. You know, mm-hmm. almost having vertigo like every couple of days where I'm walking into the walls.
Right.
That's never fun. Just the other night, I was walking from my chair, coming back here to my bedroom. So it's my bedroom here. Where I actually had to step over a cord. And when I stepped over, I was bounced on my other foot. I lost my balance. I crashed into the little cabinet that we have against mm-hmm. the wall. Everything shook. I didn't break anything. Thankfully, I've been killed there. I don't like breaking stuff. I really don't. I get mad at myself if that happens.
That's not your fault, though. I mean, you have an imbalance issue.
I know. I just don't like having to replace like these dinner plates that are hanging up on the walls, like these really pretty plates that my wife gets. I try and stay away from those because I did break one by accident. And I felt terrible about it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly with like physical therapy and all that, I've mainly plateaued with whenever I go to therapy and all that.
Right.
So what I'm doing now is we actually have bikes. They're battery powered mm-hmm. and, you know, I could, you know, hit the gas on them. I can balance on a bike. Okay. You know, but if I feel a little wobbly or something, I always stop. We just got those. Then I do work out a little bit. I mean, I'm not Charlie Chicken Chest. I'm fairly strong. That's my ex always told me. She always said I was Charlie Chicken Chest. Well, now I'm like 200 pounds and 5'8". So I think I'm doing okay.
Right.
And I go bowling now. But, of course, I could only bowl out of my wheelchair. So mm-hmm. I'm trying that again at least. Where we go shooting. And I do that. So
if you do like walk at all, it's like very short steps,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe 25 feet, if that. If there's mm-hmm. like a wall I could rest my hand on, I'll walk along it.
Right.
But anything after that, like if we got to go out to like the mailbox or something, I'll just get on my wheelchair and I'll just roll myself out there.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we go to the King of Prussia Mall for my daughter's birthday, which she loves going to, I'll naturally be in the wheelchair. We're going to do like 3-4 miles. There's no way I could walk that.
Mm-hmm.
I could.
Right.
Because I used to wear the leg braces, that I just new orthotics going from the foot to the knee. And I had those. And then I had the arm crutches, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just always a hassle where I couldn't push myself up like you are in crutches. It goes right up to the armpits.
Right.
It took a lot more strength just to be on the forearm crutches.
I was going to say those are super duper exhausting.
They are. They are. I couldn't do it, but I ended up walking through that mall when I didn't have a wheelchair, and I did it for our daughter. And I tell mm-hmm. you, I was wiped out for like a week after that.
Right.
Just completely in pain. And like I said, when I had my vertigo attack in 2015, when my ear nerves got burned out, I was in mm-hmm. vertigo for 4 days. Horrible, horrible. I wouldn't recommend that for anybody.
No, it's awful. Vertigo is terrible.
And when we lived at our previous apartment, we had a second floor and third floor apartment. The third floor is my bedroom. When I was going through the vertigo, I was in the top bedroom, you know, which had its own bathroom and everything, full bath. And when it hit, I could barely get out of bed. It was spinning so hard. You know, not to depress all you guys, but this is what vertigo is. I couldn't make it from my bed to the bathroom right there. It's like maybe just like 5 feet further than that. Mm-hmm. It took me 90 minutes just to get to there.
Right.
Because the room was spinning. I couldn't function at all. I could barely think. It was that.
Right.
Then my wife had to actually help me crawl to the bathroom and then to the bath where she could basically hose me down and get me cleaned up. And that's when they said, look, we got to take you to a hospital. Get you something. Mm-hmm. You know, get yourself worked on. So I really had a really good ear, nose, throat doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Super, super knowledgeable. Got me on some good medication. I'm on some medication is actually good for you, you know, but I don't trust the new stuff now with the mRNAs and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I have good stuff. So it's kept me functional for now. So,
which is a good thing. Do you still have like the bouts of vertigo at all?
I do. Yeah. And if I do, what happens? I'll get a migraine headache the night before I have an attack. So that kind of lets me know like, hey,
right.
You're going to be in bed for like the next day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do, I have a medication I take for that. And it eases the dizziness anyway. But there's no way I'm getting up out of bed until like the next day.
Right.
And that happens like once or twice a week, maybe. If it happens like once a week, I'm lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But it usually happens like two or twice. And there I go with that stuttering again. Like I said, I have to think about my thoughts before I talk them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way I actually have to accept my life now as it is. And sure enough, it's hard. I'm actually a moderator on another show like yours.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm like, I just can't make it in there. I'm not feeling right. Yeah, mm-hmm. I just can't function.
Right.
I feel good, but I'm like, look, I have to let you know. I just can't do it. So I'm still considering myself lucky that God's kept me on this green earth to function, hopefully being some kind of witness to him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bragging about what all I'm doing. I'm only bragging because God is helping me through all these things that I'm able to do now.
Well, I think you're definitely a witness for him and give a beautiful, you know, testimony as to what he's done in your life, because, you know, through the financial stuff, through the broken heart, through the destructive behavior, and literally every medical, physical ailment that you have had to overcome, you are an astounding person to know. And you, I don't think you probably give yourself enough credit for the person that you are and the person that you've become through him. Because I would say as a parent, like if you were my child, I would be so proud of you. Like, honest to God, like it's amazing to see the person that you are and everything that you've overcome in your life to get there.
Well, actually, since you really can't logically be my mom, I could be the weird.
No, that would be weird.
At the shrubs outside. Like, oh, there's really weird Uncle Joe. You know? That would be me. I'd be the guy wearing the sneaker and the dress shoe and probably a pink tutu somehow.
Like, we'll get magic ones. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Nobody would tell.
Yeah. So, I just want to say it's a pleasure to know you, and we have like chit chatted back and forth for years.
Yeah, we have.
Because we do know each other from a different show or whatever, but we never actually spoke on the phone.
Yeah,
until recently, and I'm so glad that happened because. Thank you. Going through your story and going through my story, like you and your wife met, you know, through the internet, my husband and I met through the internet. There's so many similarities in our stories. Like your thing was at Christmas. Our meeting was at Thanksgiving.
Oh, there you go.
You know, like it was all, like all of that together was really really a blessing to have that conversation and be like, oh my God, like we're like twinsies.
Yeah, we are.
In reverse.
See, you're the more attractive twinsie.
No, that's not around. That's not a thing. No.
Now, a funny thing about Thanksgiving is my wife is such a good cook. I don't want to grit on my mom's cooking at all, but her cooking wasn't that good. Even though she was a restaurant manager and all that, it was fair. It was okay. And I got by.
You know? It was edible.
Yeah, barely. Yeah. But she can cook better than I can. I did try cooking with my wife once, a Thanksgiving turkey. I tried it once just to, try and give her a break for once.
Just for shits and giggles.
Yeah, more giggles on this side. Well, by the time everything was done, I had to call 911. Had to have the police come around and tape off the kitchen and all that. The stove was on fire and the oven door was blown open. Okay. Then we had Philadelphia Airport call us, or local airport to like Delaware and all that, call us saying, we see something on radar. It was our turkey going low orbit past the moon. Okay. They never found the oven door. Okay. That's how good I can cook. I can burn air.
Let us keep you out the kitchen. You and my husband would get along well.
Granted.
Because he is not, you don't let him in the kitchen for any reason ever. Not even
boil water. I'll keep him entertained with the guns. How about
exactly. Oh, boy. Well, anyway, my dear, I am going to have to let you go because I have another show I have to do.
Oh, okay.
So, I want to say thank you so much.
Thank you.
For joining me, for blessing me with, even knowing you, because it is truly an honor and truly a blessing. Where can people find you if they so choose?
Well, I'm online a little bit. I don't have my own channel like this. I don't think I'm not brave enough to do what you're doing. You put yourself out there with the microphone and the camera and all, you find stuff so wonderful to talk about. I wouldn't know the first thing because I wouldn't want to hold everybody up with my stories. I want to hear their stories.
That's exactly why I do that, because people are fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I love meeting people online. Yeah. I got a couple friends from these other shows I talk with, not a whole lot, but I was able to start talking to you through another show during the day. Right. And I was like, well, I listened to you as you talked with one of the other Laurens or Lauren or Laura or somebody like that, that gave their testimony. The one that had the internal broken neck.
Tara.
Yeah. Yeah. Her. I heard that and that was amazing. I was like, now you are such a good interviewer. I always liked your voice anyway.
I appreciate that because I was not when I first started. I feel like I've come into my own when I found like the niche of what I really like to do.
And for me, my niche is being in my wheelchair, I guess. My wife says that my personality has come out more since I'm in the wheelchair. And I tell people about it here or there on Twitter. I might send a picture of me like rolling down our cul-de-sac at 90 miles an hour or something. I don't know.
Or races.
Or bringing out my sense of humor, which I love. I'm a writer. I love to write. I write, things that thankfully nobody has seen. I would love to write my own stories sometimes. I love to draw. I draw pets for friends or pets for other people that had the pets pass away. I've shown you some of my art, I think. And I just like doing things to keep me busy until the time God calls us home or calls us to next big thing at Walmart or something, wherever.
Exactly. Wherever it's going to happen at.
Yeah. And I want to thank you for the chance to actually talk to you like this. Absolutely. I'm glad you steered the conversation how you wanted it. Because if I was doing it, I'd still be talking about my wife 13 years ago or something like that. I guess. Maybe it's interesting, maybe not. I don't know.
That's a beautiful thing, though, because we both are very lucky in the aspect that our spouses are definitely the soulmates that we were meant to have.
My wife's my best friend on yonder. Hey, Bun. Janet says hi. She said hi back.
She just waved. She's like, she I'm not waved.
I don't know him. He could talk on his own thing. That's fine.
She's shy like my husband is. He refuses to come on my show. And he's like, nobody's going to want to hear my voice. Nobody's going to want to hear anything I have to say. I don't have anything to add to the conversation. I'm like, we literally could talk all day long.
Yeah.
About all kinds of stuff, squirrely, serious, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no. He would clam up. He would not like that at all.
I've actually thought up writing sketch comedy for like a mic night at somebody's bar for like 5 minutes. I got a couple things that I wanted to write out, and I'm not sure if I want to try it out yet, but I've made you laugh anyway.
So I have, after we get off of here, I have the perfect thing for you that I'm going to tell you about.
All right.
Okay. So, anyway, for me and for Deaf Griffin, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time. So have a good one.
Take care and God bless.